Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Another beautiful spring day here in East Alabama. Hope you're doing well. Man, there's a lot going on locally. Even though, right, school is out, Auburn University baseball wins last night in Atlanta against Georgia Tech. Three homers, including a three-run bomb to put the game away by Cade Ballou in the ninth inning. So Auburn on a modest win streak. They won two in a row as they get ready to go to Missouri this weekend. Meanwhile, both Auburn High and Lee Scott are playing. Lee Scott playing for the state title over in Montgomery against Glenwood. They dropped the first game and they were in extra innings of the second game. So a must-win situation for Lee Scott. That's over on Tiger 104.5. And then coming up right now, on W. Lee, is Auburn High and Central
right
in the state semifinals of the AHSAA playoffs and over in Phoenix City.
You've also got the SEC softball tournament going on right now.
Yeah,
on campus.
I hadn't even gotten to that.
SEC, so I drove by.
There's a lot on the diamond.
I recognize LSU purple and gold. I feel like LSU was in action. I think I saw Vanderbilt practicing. They're utilizing the other fields there on campus. But, yeah, I think SEC tournament action going on all week. So you should see – I would imagine that you're going to see representation from all kinds of different fans around town. If you want to go, tickets, I'm sure
– tickets are available.
Tickets are available, and there's a way to go check out some check out some different teams. And it's also the it's the end of the season most likely for an Auburn team, Bill, that – is going to make a coaching change when the season
opens. Yeah, so it's could be last stand. The Tigers have played pretty well since Mickey Dean announced that he would be stepping down at the end of the season. So they're hoping to continue their good play as they host the SEC softball tournament. So quite a few things going on the diamond. We'll try to keep you updated on everything that we can as we move on through the show. And Jason Caldwell, who is with us most Wednesdays here in the studio, on the road today. So we'll check in with him at around 4:30 this afternoon. Other than that, let's see.
Nothing. I mean, we're in sort of an off-season mode for basketball and football, right?
Just sort of in wait and see if
Did Hugh Freeze talk to the media today? Was there something?
No. It was a speaking engagement.
That's what it was. Okay, because I saw some quotes or some things attributed to Hugh making its way out there. It sounds like Hugh Freeze expects to add. How about this, Bill? Sounds like Hugh Freeze expects to add multiple players to the team between now and fall camp.
Yeah, I believe so. We've talked about that. I mean, they've. They obviously have an offer for Khalil Jacobs, the linebacker. They're looking for another cornerback.
Bill, please. Khalil Jacobs, the...
No, I go by his most recent thing. I'm not going to go by high school.
Even if it's my high school?
Oh. Yeah, well, that's right.
What if he was from Bruton or something? We wouldn't mention it all
Bruton
the time.
Bruton or Flomaton? Well, I probably
Flomaton.
Would.
Flomaton. Yeah,
I
come on.
Would.
He's a Niceville Eagle.
But, I mean, he is the South Alabama transfer. He's not a Niceville transfer, though. He's a Niceville product and a South Alabama transfer.
But if he were from Auburn or Opelika and he'd gone to South Alabama and now was thinking about coming to Auburn, we'd mention where he was from, and I want to shout out. We haven't had Niceville has not been that well represented, aside from of course me, right? Like Niceville hasn't been that well represented. No, you've got Eli Stove. Remember Roy Finch?
Yes, I do.
Running back,
Oklahoma.
Drew's nodding his head over there. He was a kid that Auburn made a push for, but ended up at Oklahoma. You had the, you know, my friends, the Carr brothers, you know, back in the day, but really had not that many Niceville kids have made their way. So it would be really cool to see Khalil Jacobs add to the add to the club here in Auburn of folks from Niceville. But you know, like you said, Jacobs is up against, or Auburn is up against, at least Jacobs' former team or former head coach, now with the Alabama Crimson Tide, and you've got other players in the mix too. And you know, I don't know what the depth charts look like as far as, you know, is Jacobs there an opportunity for a lot more playing time at one of these places than the others? I don't know the answer.
I believe Alabama probably has more proven guys than Auburn does. They, you know. Auburn,
is it down to just those two for Khalil Jacobs? Is that
Missouri.
The expectation? See, that's what Missouri. I'd worry about. I'd worry about like a Duke.
I absolutely would. People keep forgetting about them.
Like a Duke Miles thing, right? Like people think, oh, it's just going to come down to the in-state schools, and it doesn't necessarily have to, especially with a guy like this. So, yeah, I would think that Auburn and Alabama have the edge, but at the same time. But, you know, because Auburn and Alabama are two of the closer major conference schools. They're with Florida State, the closest major conference schools to Niceville, Fort Walton Beach, Destin, you know, this guy's hometown. So it's, you know, staying local, you know, allows him to play. If he wants to stay local and go to the SEC, Auburn and Alabama are a better shot than pretty much anybody else. But maybe staying local isn't all that important. He wants the best opportunity, and that could be with a Missouri team that right now, Bill, I believe the over-under for wins for Missouri this year is 9.5.
Yeah, like I was going to say, I would think 9-10.
There are some folks who really like what they bring back. They really like the schedule, and they think Missouri could push for a playoffs. Could be one of those SEC teams pushing for a playoffs, but it's almost expected that Georgia is going to go to the playoff with the talent they've assembled. And, I mean, the odds are, you know, it's almost like you're – I think they're too – make the playoff, it's less than even money. Like you're losing, you know, they're minus whatever to make the playoff, and they're only like 3-1 to win the national championship. The odds for Georgia are it's astronomical this year. But beyond Georgia and the SEC, especially with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, like they're expected to be in a 12-team playoff, the first 12-team playoff. There's expected to be multiple SEC teams.
Oh, yeah, I would think so. I would sure think so.
Georgia seems like the safest bet. Mm-hmm. After that, people would maybe argue between Texas and Alabama
as to
who's next. But beyond those three.
Missouri.
Ole Miss, Missouri.
Yeah, Ole Miss and Missouri.
Our team. I mean, LSU has a lot to replace, but they're LSU. A&M is, you know, Mike Elko in year one, Oklahoma, whatever. So it's wide open, but I would say Missouri's in that mix, so I'd watch out for Khalil Jacobs maybe considering the Tigers.
Yeah, so Auburn definitely still interested in adding a couple of more players to their roster. They have plenty of room. They've got at least 6 or 7 spots on the 85-man roster, so that's not a reason that they wouldn't be adding players.
Yeah, no, I would think Auburn. I don't know. Just it's similar to what Bruce Pearl is going to have to do. I mean, are there spots? We talked about this yesterday with the addition of Rustin Chambers, and sort of wondering where could he compete for a starting spot if that's what he's going to do on the offensive line. We sort of settled on Jeremiah Wright at right guard, maybe Tutal Miller at right tackle, depending on Folks would point out, I did a podcast with Adam Cole and Justin Ferguson about this, folks would point out that the pass blocking numbers for Tutal Miller last year would indicate that is a spot where Auburn could conceivably bring in competition.
Right, although Chambers is a guy that was known for his run blocking and was not considered a great pass blocker at Akron, so I don't know that would be an upgrade.
And I would point out, as one of the, you know, I'm an elected official in the Tutal Miller fan club, Bill. Like I'm here saying he wasn't even supposed to play this past season. Remember the preseason, even going into the fall. Like the plan wasn't Tutal Miller was supposed to play very sparingly last season, and it was supposed to be Dylan Wade and Gunnar Britton at tackle virtually all season long. That's not what ended up happening. How did it work out? Did they slide Britton inside?
Yes. He moved into guard.
And some of that was because they felt good about what they'd seen from Tutal Miller very early.
And it's funny. I mean, as much as all the angst that there was about Auburn's got to find a tackle, they've got to find a tackle. They had more problems at guard than they did at tackle. really last year. And I think that that was one of the things heading into the offseason. They still felt like they could upgrade more on the interior than looking for another tackle. And that's where Chambers, an interesting addition, but he's a guy that looks like, I mean, I watched a little film on him, and he's a good-looking run blocker. But, I mean, he looks like he could slide in, and I think there's more opportunity, at least less depth at the guard spots than there is at tackle right now.
Yeah, I mean, who would before Chambers arrives, like, who would you think is the next guy up if something happened to either Dylan Wade or Jeremiah Wright? Would they call upon Tate Johnson to slide in, you know, in play and play guard? Like, who's the number three guard at the moment behind Wade and Wright? Is it E.J. Harris?
It probably is E.J. Harris over Jaden Musgrave.
Auburn High School, E.J. Yeah. E.J. Harris. Mm-hmm. J.M. Muskie. By the way, did Muskie play in the spring game? Remember we talked about this.
No, he did not.
And we didn't know if it was injury or
still
personal.
Still not sure if it was injury or what reason
there There's
was.
Been no reporting on his no. status or anything
He still
like
shows
that.
On the roster.
He still shows on the roster, unlike Sean Jackson, as you pointed out yesterday, which, you know, still will – You know, maybe we'll ask Jason about that, because I feel like if we ask enough people, someone's going to write a story, aren't they?
Sure, they will check, and if there's something to write about, they will.
And I hope the story says as first reported by Bill Cameron on The Drive with Bill Cameron. I hope that's what it says. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
A tribute, Bill, folks. I think where do you think Auburn could look to up? Do you think there's anywhere on the team where Auburn thinks we need to try to upgrade the starting position in the transfer portal this offseason?
I don't know that there's a position they feel like they have to, but I would think that Hugh Freeze is looking, and if there's anybody who he feels is better than a starter, you go after him. I don't know who that is.
I don't like the way I phrased that question, because he would take somebody who could start just about anywhere.
Sure.
Are there spots where you think Auburn is looking to get? Are there particular spots where you think Auburn could stand to get deeper, or add a veteran player who you think could? I mean, you know what I mean? Like it's sort of like where are the priorities if Auburn's going to add players in the transfer portal this offseason? Do you feel like there are clear positions that need to be priorities, or do you think they could take a project?
Take best players available
Take projects and see if they develop into.
I think you just take the guys you feel are have the potential to be the best players that fit with what you're with your program, with your culture.
Yeah, there's not a.
There were gaping holes when Hugh Freeze took over.
Oh, sure. And there were even spots.
A lot of those have at least been patched to the point where. You know, you just don't have to be reaching for anyone who plays that position or could play that position.
I think there were even spots when the spring portal opened, right, where you could have said, well, man, Auburn could probably use another defensive lineman.
Oh, they did. They needed another.
Auburn could stand
They needed another interior. They needed another nose, a tackle, another end. And they got one of each.
Yeah, I was beating the drum on the edge thing, and not necessarily because McLeod needs to be challenged or replaced, but because beyond McLeod it was a lot of true freshmen they really like. They go out and add somebody who could be a supplemental piece alongside McLeod this year and could very easily, with multiple years of eligibility left, slide into a starting role in his final year of college football. Or, I mean, look, in the case of Kieron Crawford, Bill, he could break out this year.
Yeah,
and decide,
you're right.
You know,
oh,
what? Like, I mean, this guy is a, I mean, that is a Rivaldo Fairweather-esque story in the, you know, the advanced athlete who switches to football as a senior year and finds himself as a productive I mean, that's unfathomable, isn't it, Bill? Like, having seen high-level high school, like the thought of, like, yeah, I'm going to pick up football the offseason of my senior year.
It's not that uncommon, though. I mean, it happens fairly often. Most of those kids don't, you know, before the transfer portal – a lot of them didn't get the opportunity to play at bigger schools. And those would be some of the guys that you had never heard of that got drafted in the NFL draft. And you're wondering, why was this guy at, some directional state?
Well, no, let's be clear. I mean, why did DeMarcus Ware and why did OC end up at Troy when these are longtime productive NFL players?
Well, OC Umanyora was a guy that, I mean, he really, he didn't play. DeMarcus was a a big athletic safety, but he didn't have the speed to play safety at the college level, and you couldn't know for sure that he was going to gain 40 pounds and not lose any, and matter of fact, probably add a little speed.
And so it was. I mean, maybe it was less of a gamble at the non-power five level to take a chance on somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Like DeMarcus Ware, and ends up paying off. But no, I think just stories like that are really, really cool. You know, to either a guy, yeah, without a position under recruiter, or in the case of Kieron Crawford, a guy switching positions or switching sports before his senior year and turning that into a productive D1 football career that now finds him in the SEC. I think that could be could be somebody to watch, and it's a yeah. I think that now that they've done a good job addressing what we thought were clear priorities coming out of the spring. We talked about maybe another veteran receiver, interior defensive line, the edge position could use another veteran player, preferably one with a couple years of eligibility left, so not just replacing him and McLeod the same offseason. Colton Hood leaving opens up probably the need for
that's where I think probably
closest thing to a priority now
would be an experienced cover guy,
because right now you're leaning heavily on Keontae, Kayan Lee, and Champ Anthony to be productive and healthy.
Yeah, that's for three positions. You better have five or six guys for those three positions, and they've got plenty of numbers. There's just nobody with much experience. Remember, Kayan Lee's a guy that's only started for, you know, five or six games.
And Champ Anthony.
And he's in his second year in college.
Champ Anthony spent most of last year as a reserve.
As a backup.
And played a little bit when the more experienced options got hurt. How much did Antonio Kite play?
Not much at all.
Not much at all. So, I mean,
there's not much on-field Power 5 experience, or actually, you know, college experience on Auburn's roster behind its starters, and the starters don't have that much experience.
And Kite's probably the next man up right now if something happens to Keontae or Kayan Lee on the outside with Colton Hood in the portal. Like I would think
Kite, Tyler Scott's
probably in that mix too. And then
JC Hart.
I wonder if something happened to Champ Anthony, who we presume is the starting nickel right now, would they go to the bench and go to the reserve options there? Do they slide Keontae Scott back over to the slot and play somebody else on the outside like they've got?
They very well might. I mean,
Dylan Wade and Keontae Scott are both tempting options like that, right? Where because you saw them at a different position last year, now you're playing them at a new position. If you need them to go back to the old position, I think it could be manageable in the case of both of them. Where if Dylan Wade needs to go play tackle, maybe they'll try that out if they like another. I mean, I don't know if they'd love to, but if they feel like, if something happens to one of Auburn's two tackle options and they think Dylan Wade is one of the two best options at tackle, and maybe that's where Chambers comes into play, right? Having more veteran depth at guard gives you that option. But it's a little bit similar in Keontae Scott, right? Where if they feel like they need to go to Keontae in the slot, they can, or they can play him outside. Who else did you say? It's Keontae, Champ, and Kayan starting. You feel like Tyler Scott,
Antonio Kite, J.C. Hart.
Who else is on scholarship? That's an option.
Well,
there.
I mean, Jake Crawford was a true freshman that was out there at corner.
Okay.
Kinsley Faustin is a guy that worked some. It was a freshman who was working at nickel.
I would maintain.
You've got nothing but youngsters. I mean, that have a lot of talent. But, I mean, real youngsters, because the rest of the guys are more safeties.
They played.
Jaron Thompson, yeah. I think, said he worked a little bit at nickel. So, I mean, they might use him some at nickel with Caleb. But you had Jaron and Caleb there at one safety, and Terrence Love and C.J. Johnson. So, I mean, they could definitely use some more experience back there in the secondary. And I would think primarily at the corners.
Yeah, I think we heard about both Bug and Terrence Love playing some nickel, but I think they'd rather play both of those guys.
Yeah, Terrence Love is
big.
He is a, I was going to say, he is a big.
It's a big slot corner.
Because he's 6'2 and around 220.
But you know what? DJ Durkin sends the inside corners here and there too. So maybe a guy like, you know, if they're playing closer to the line of scrimmage and there's a lot of against the run stuff, I mean, maybe they would try Terrence Love in that position, although he is a, like you said, he's a big, imposing
defensive
back.
He's a guy that looks like he's really going to be a good safety. Really going to be a good safety. So, yeah, so there's some spots available there. So we're just sort of waiting to see. I mean, Auburn should have hopefully there is some news about Auburn's basketball prospects in the transfer portal here before the end of the week. We'll talk about that and more. We need to get to our first break, though. Hour number one here of the Wednesday Drive. Love for you to join in, and you can do so by calling the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840. The Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, an Alabama-based firm now hiring for skilled trade positions. 334-209-6355, the number for Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And they also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We will get to our first break of the afternoon. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
At Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air, your comfort is our priority as we gear up for yet another season.
ESPN 1067 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. 26 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. We'll check in with Jason Caldwell after our bottom of the hour break. We were talking a little bit about the football transfer portal. Auburn should have a visitor. All right, so I was on with the Sandersons this morning, Wimp and his son Barry. And yes, I got another pronunciation. But when I told them that the Samford Media Guide said achor, achor, they went, okay, I'll go with that one, because they've just been going by what some Birmingham sportscasters were calling him, Akor, Akor.
Okay, well, I showed it to you.
I know you did.
I showed you the screen.
You showed it to me. Yeah, you showed it to me?
Yeah, no, I did what? A chore, the forward from
now, I don't know if he made it in today. I know Auburn was hoping to get him in today. Jordan Ivy Curry, the guard from UTSA, is supposed to be in tomorrow. We'll ask Jason about those as well here in just a few minutes when we talk with him. Hey, there's some big news in Major League Baseball today. As the number one draft pick from last year, Paul Skeens is coming up to start for the Pirates. The Pirates are an exciting young team, sort of like, I guess they're very much along the lines of what the Reds appeared to be last year, with a lot of young players, but they've got a good looking young pitching staff. This reminds me of the Marlins a few years ago, with all the arms that they're accumulating, and now you're going to bring up Paul Skeens, who has been almost unhittable.
They do,
in the minors.
They do appear to have missed. I'm going to be premature here. They do appear to have missed on that number one pick catcher, right? Who had to get, you know, they had to pinch hit the other day for, like, you know, he was the number one overall pick. And was that
Henry Davis?
That's Davis, right? They took him first overall in the draft a couple of years ago. It's like at this stage.
We'll see.
At this stage, you would hope that a guy
that's
who
sort of like
first,
saying the Orioles missed on Jackson Holliday. I mean,
a
it's,
little
it's
bit
early.
Davis is a little bit older than Holliday, right?
He is.
I would say at this stage, you'd like for him to be a consistent bat in the lineup. At the very least,
it's really difficult for a catcher.
It is
to come up and hit immediately.
But compared to the results they seem to be getting on their early,
yeah,
pitching,
I mean,
returns.
Henry Davis is he's 24. I mean, that's a little older than guys that are normally hitting the majors for the first time.
I don't think I'm being look. I'm being gentle here, but like a 24-year-old who was the first overall pick, you'd hope would be a productive major leaguer, you know, at the end of the season, and he's playing, but it's like I think the bat, you're hoping with a little bit more from that, but the pitching, they've hit on several of the young pitchers, right? Like they've hit on and Skeens looks to be, I mean, the minor league stats for Skeens are are off the charts.
They're phenomenal. Yeah, they're off the charts. Phenomenal. So, I mean, now he hasn't pitched a whole lot of innings. He's only pitched 27 innings thus far in the minors this year, but he struck out 45 in those 27 innings. And Skeens isn't giving up 17 hits.
And Skeens isn't the only young pitcher for the Pirates.
No, they've got a guy named Jared Jones, who a lot of people think may, you know, now of the non-imports, he's probably as impressive a young pitcher as there is in the National League. But you've got both Chicago and Los Angeles would say, hey, our guys qualify for Rookie of the Year, and either Yamamoto or Imanaga may well earn Rookie of the Year. But no, Jared Jones has pitched like an ace. Mitch Keller seemed to find himself a year ago. He just pitched a complete game a couple of days ago. So, I mean, that has the chance of being a very strong front of a rotation for the Pirates.
Well, if Skeens and Jones emerge, like they could have – I would think of it as what the Cubs had with Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor. Like if you have those two with what Jones has shown through the first month and what we think Skeens is.
Did you see the number? I saw this the other day. Jared Jones has done something that hasn't been done since before 1900, as far as in his first first six or seven major league starts, his strikeout to walks ratio is the highest that there has ever been in the history of Major League Baseball for a youngster in his first seven Major League starts.
And the Braves have had some young pitchers came up and started their careers brilliantly. Freed, Soroka, remember? I mean, that rookie season from Mike Soroka, you know, things like that. But the and even Kyle Wright had that great season not all that long ago. But it's the, if the what do you think of the Wood and Pryor comparison? If the Cubs get with the way Jones is pitching now, you add Skeens to that. Like that's sort of the I like the Marlins too. You know, when Beckett and Penny and Dontrell Willis were all rookies in 03, and that team had a shock. I mean, they made a manager change early in the season and went on to win the championship. Like they were struggling first 2 months of the year and you know turned their hat around like Stallone in Over the Top. You know, they flipped the switch. And got it going.
Well,
but
let's just say
we'll see what the Pirates can do.
The debut of Paul Skeens will probably be the most highly anticipated debut of a rookie pitcher since Steven Strasburg.
I would hope that Major League Baseball's broadcast partners can figure out a way to get Paul Skeens' debut on national television. I would hope if it's not too late for ESPN or Fox to move some things around.
It's Saturday. Drew said it's against the Cubs.
Is it on? Oh yeah, I mean, one would think that, you know, whether it's ESPN or Fox or even the MLB Network, somebody can find a way to slide that game.
Well, I definitely want to watch it on the national. I'll be watching it if I can, you know, wherever it is. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Jason Caldwell,
did you see Disney? So there's demand for WNBA preseason games to the point where I think they're adding them to Disney Plus. Like originally, there was no plan to. Stream or telecast them, but there's been enough, especially Caitlin Clark's games. Folks are very interested to see how, you know, once she starts playing preseason games.
Yeah, I mean,
there's going to be
I can't imagine that there'd been a huge rush just to get them if there hadn't been the addition of Caitlin Clark.
Well, there was another game where I think it was Angel Reese's first preseason game where there was no plan to stream it, and so somebody just showed it on their phone. Somebody just basically, you know, live streamed it on their phone, you know, doing the aiming the camera one way when one team has the ball and flipping the phone the other way when the other team has the ball, sitting corner, kind of at midcourt, and a lot of people drew. Yeah, I think at some point over a million people were tuned in to this live stream to watch Angel Reese and a couple of the other young, you know. I'm really interested. I'm really interested to see how the stars from this past college season that had the record-breaking ratings, whether it's Caitlin Clark, whether it's Angel Reese, Cameron Brink is a big name out of Stanford. She's going to play in the LA for the LA team. I'm interested to see how that translates. You know, once we get into the WNBA season, and if there is indeed this surge of interest and viewership in the league, I think there's a chance of it especially with the games Caitlin Clark is playing. I mean, the draft did a bigger number than any WNBA game has done in 20 years or whatever. Like it did a bigger number than the finals last year. So these girls clearly moved the number and moved the needle. And I want to see what it looks like once they start playing regular season games.
We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Jason Caldwell joins us. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. We're efforting Jason Caldwell. We will continue to do so as he's on the road, and we'll check in with him. Congratulations to the Auburn women's golf team winning the regional they hosted out at the AU Club. Wasn't easy today. We told you yesterday they had a 15-stroke lead. They shot 9 over today to win it by, I believe, 4 strokes. Yeah, 4 strokes over Oregon. Auburn 9 over Oregon, 5 under today. So, I mean, Oregon was one of those teams 18 strokes back of Auburn. They made up 14 of them, but Auburn wins, and they're moving on. The top 5 teams advancing, and that will be Auburn, Oregon, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tulsa. I mentioned Jason Caldwell on the road. He's joining us now by phone on the Drive hotline. JC, how's it going today?
I'm good. Hopefully you can hear me. I'm at Parker High School. Practice going on, and got a lot of music out here, so hopefully you can hear me. I'm trying to cover my phone up a little bit so you maybe can hear me enough.
Oh, no, it's all good. It's all good. I mean, I know you do go on the road an awful lot. Is it you, just you, or you and Christian?
Me and Christian, we went to Thompson earlier today, so we've already had probably 7 or 8 D1 guys. And you come out to Parker, and there's probably 4 or 5 more, including, you know, 5-star DB name offered, who's been to Ohio State. Jordan Crawford, defensive tackle that's committed to Auburn out of here. You know, a couple other really good players on this Parker team. But obviously Thompson probably had, I would say there's a legit 8 SEC-level players between the 27, 26, and 25 classes. So we'll probably get 12 or 14 guys today by the time we're done.
That's pretty impressive when you're hitting 2 schools. And, I mean, what a resurgence it's really been there in the Birmingham area. Not a shock there at Thompson. They've had some really outstanding talent and quite a run of it there. But, I mean, Parker has turned it around, offered, yes, as you said, committed to Ohio State, but Auburn and other schools aren't giving up.
Yeah, no, this is not the kind of guy you give up on when you look at him in person. I mean, this is one of those guys you look at and you go, man, that guy's first-round NFL talent. When you watch him move, you watch him run. He's 6'1", you know, 185-pound corner right now. He looks like what Walt McFadden looked like as a senior in college, and this kid's still in high school. I mean, he is long and fluid. You know, Walt played NFL for a while, but this guy's got so much more ahead of him. But, you know, it's a talented group. And obviously, when you look at these guys, I mean, you look out here at this Parker team, and Thompson kind of stands alone because of their line of scrimmage. But you look at this Parker group and the skill guys out here, and especially DBs and some of the wide receiver group, they got some guys that can go.
Man, that's impressive. We were talking a little while ago, Jason, about, you know, it sort of being the off season, at least as far as a lot of player movement. I mean, there's still plenty of players in the portal, both football and basketball. And I wouldn't say that Auburn's done in football. Obviously, they're waiting for the decision by Khalil Jacobs. But I would think there are a couple of other spots that they might be interested in and keeping up with or trying to bring players in.
Yeah, I think it comes back to what we say every Wednesday. Any place you feel like you can go and help your team, you better try. I don't think you can go, hey, we're perfect, we're set anywhere. Even if you feel like you're good, if you bring in a 1-year guy that can help you and can come out and create more competition, create more depth, then you better do it. And I think that's what we've seen from this staff. I mean, obviously, I think in the secondary, if you could find a corner that has played a lot of football and a veteran guy to come in and kind of help you, I think that would be big. Obviously, Khalil Jacobs, it's kind of the same thing to bridge the gap at linebacker. But I think anywhere right now, you look at it, you go, hey, if you find somebody, I think probably that there's a couple of spots that are tough. We just saw they just helped the offensive line group with Ronan Chambers, a guy I spoke with last night, and a guy that can help you. I think it's probably different for places you play multiple players. I think you look and you go, you know, wide receiver, you play multiple players. Defensive line, you play a lot of multiple players. Defensive back, you play multiple guys. I think it's different than trying to find a quarterback where you're playing one guy. I think it's different then. I think it's offensive line, you don't play as many, but you need more guys in case of emergency. But I think these other spots you look at and go, yeah, where you're playing multiple guys, if you find somebody to come in and jump in that rotation to help you, then I think those are things that you better be doing.
We were talking about it earlier in the show, Jason, and the secondary. While there's a lot to like about what Auburn's bringing to the to the season right now in the secondary, Keontae Scott is switching from the inside to the outside. Kay and Lee and Champ Anthony played sparingly in their first year, although Kayan was called upon quite a bit because of the injuries. But they're both guys who, you know, sort of dipped their toe into their first year of major college football. And then beyond them, you don't really have. I mean, Antonio Kite is a lot of potential and a guy who, you know, has bided his time at Alabama for a couple of years, but he doesn't really have a track record of production. So it is. I mean, it does seem, especially in the aftermath of Colton Hood going into the portal, it does seem like Auburn is thin on experience in the secondary, especially at corner and nickel.
Yeah, I think that's the thing you look at it. And even the loss of Colton Hood, you didn't lose a guy that had experience. You lost a guy that you thought was talented. Yeah. So it doesn't really kill you. Even then, it wasn't an experienced guy. It was a guy that had been in your system, but only for a spring because it's a different system. So he's a guy that was going to play. There's no question about it. But I think I look at it, and I think it's this is the ultimate two sides of the coin. You lost a ton of experience, but I think you're better athletically. How much can you make up one with the other and vice versa? I think Auburn's a much more athletic secondary than they were a year ago. But I don't know that you'll get to the play that you got a year ago because you lost a ton of experience. The guys that are good football players, but the guys you're replacing them with are bigger, stronger, and faster. Now, how much does that impact things? We'll see. But, yeah, I do think that experience, if you can find another guy especially could come in and add some experience, would be a beneficial thing. Obviously, Jaron Thompson's a guy that can do some of those things mm-hmm. that you brought in and can play nickel, which is big. Champ Anthony has some experience from last year, a junior college guy that's a little older as the nickel. So you have a couple of those pieces, but obviously trying to get older, I think in every sport, trying to find a way to get older is one of the magic keys to trying to figure out a roster right now.
Talking with Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here on the Wednesday Drive. Jason, you mentioned you talked to Ronan Chambers last night. Just let us know what his thoughts are. I mean, that was a nice pickup for Auburn, but, I mean, it's one at a spot where Auburn seemingly, you know, has its starting spots covered, but he's a guy that could come in and push it a couple of different spots.
Yeah, I think you look at it, there's a couple of things. I think the first thing is you see a guy and you see the draw of playing in the Southeastern Conference. I think that's where it starts. It's a guy that wants to go prove himself against the best of the best, and that's the Southeastern Conference. So I think that's where it starts for Ronan Chambers. But a guy that my guess is will get a look to go out there and compete with Too Tall at right tackle. Can he get into that rotation a little bit? I think that's where things will start. But, you know, I think it's a guy that adds a depth piece, and I think that's a big deal. But I think veteran, a guy that was 270 pounds when he was a senior in high school that now weighs 305 pounds. So you look at him and you go, this is one of those guys that has developed. He's gotten bigger and stronger. How quickly can he jump in there? But I think he's a guy that can provide you some depth and gives you some versatility because I think he'll be a guy that will be able to come in and pick up that offense pretty quickly.
All right, Jason, what we'll do, if it's okay, is just keep you for about another 4 or 5 minutes. Then,
Yeah, that's good.
Let's get to basketball because, you know, Auburn still looking to add front court and back court help. I know that they have the back court, at least as far as Jordan Ivy Curry scheduled to be visiting tomorrow. Did they ever get anything lined up to get the Samford big guy? Now, We looked up the Samford pronunciation guide. I've heard him pronounced so many different ways, but the Samford pronunciation guide called him Uchor. Have you have any idea what the status is with him?
That is what my Southernese would pronounce. Maybe the pronunciation would be a chore as well. So that's what I'm going to stick with. Haven't heard anything in terms of when a visit would occur. Just that it would be sometime this week. So I think they're trying to still iron those things out. But yeah, Ivy Curry's supposed to be in tomorrow. I think probably be just a couple of day visit. And these are the ones that happen pretty quickly.
Yep.
If you're Auburn, you'd like to get something wrapped up before a guy leaves campus. We've seen how quickly things can change. So my guess is if you're Auburn, you'd want to try to wrap these up because this would be two, I think, monumental pieces to add to this roster when you look at what this roster is right now. I think, you know, the guys they've tried to get to add to what they have already, I think these are both players that are better than what they were recruiting earlier. So I think, in my opinion, I think these will be better pieces for Auburn. If you can add these two, then I think you look at this roster going into next season and you go, that thing is set up for success.
Yeah, it's hard for me to argue with that. Got to get to quickly to get to baseball because nice to get a win last night at Georgia Tech. They're in it's like an elimination game every time they play, and it's not even all in their hands. But it's good to still have something to play for. But this is another. Team, there're going to be some changes made, roster turnover, and the portal is going to have to be, I think, a big help in addition to the outstanding signing class that Butch Thompson has coming in.
Yeah, I think right now you're looking at going, what can you figure out about this roster heading into next season? Who are big pieces that you need to keep? Who are pieces that you like to keep? And who are guys that you say, hey, might be time to move on. It's just the nature of the world we live in right now. So I think that's a lot of what the end of this season looks like. And, you know, we've seen some guys step up, whether it be Parker Carlson, Hayden Murphy. Obviously, these young position players, Kale Strickland hadn't had a chance to play as much. But we've seen Kay Ballou and Eric Guevara, I think both those guys be really centerpieces for this roster moving forward. Obviously, Ike Irish, Chris Stanfield coming on really strong here at the end of the year. Hadn't played great coming into this, but these last few weeks has played really well. Can you get Cooper McMurray back to be a part of that? If so, then you start talking about having some building blocks. But I think the mound, I mean, you look at it,
yeah.
I don't think there's any question that you're going to have to go find a couple of weekend starter type guys out of the portal, guys that are ready to roll from day one. I think that's where it starts.
Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover with us. Usually when he's in town, he's with us here in the studio. Jason, let everybody know what you guys have got going, what they can look forward to, how they can keep up with all of it, and follow you.
Yeah, check us out at auburnundercover.com. Follow all our stuff here for these road trips this week, and also follow me on Twitter at ITATJ.
All right, Jason. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
Jason Caldwell joining us from up at Parker High School. He and Christian Clemente. I mean, Jason, that's one thing you can find. If their first football practice and there's a prospect somewhere around, Jason's liable to be there. So we appreciate him joining us. We will get to our final break of hour number one. We will open up the phone lines. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Final minute or two of hour number one here of the Wednesday Drive. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell for joining us for a long segment. He's up at doing a little scouting up in the Birmingham area. He and Christian Clemente were at Thompson earlier today, then at Parker. As he said, probably get to see 12 Division I prospects in just those two practices today. Tell you what we will do here at the top of the hour. We'll see if we can catch you up on what's going on the Diamonds. Did see that LSU beat Alabama in the first game of the SEC softball tournament. We'll see if we can get you some scores from there and update you on local baseball as well, which you can tune over during the top of the hour break and check out over on W. Lee, Auburn High and Central. The situation with Lee Scott was in peril, very much in peril, because they lost the first game and they were in extra innings in game two. And that game, I believe, has gone final. So I've got to find that one If you either one of you guys don't see it before we get to the top of the hour.
Yeah, I got the softball bracket in front of me right now, and the Wednesday action includes, I believe, the next, either the game, maybe it's going on right
should
now.
Should be going on now.
Would be Georgia-Auburn would be playing right now, because you had Missouri and Ole Miss, which I think went final in the last hour or so. That's Missouri defeating Ole Miss 3-1.
All
right. LSU beat Bama in the 8-9 game 3-2. You got Mississippi State, South Carolina later tonight, but Georgia and Auburn should be going on over at the softball complex right now.
Lee Scott walks off Glenwood in game 2-5-4. So one game for the state title between the two teams that are moving from the AISA over at Patterson Field tomorrow. Meanwhile, we'll update you on Auburn High and Central as well. And back for hour number two. Love for you to join in here on the Wednesday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in as well. The second hour of the show brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can join in anything on your mind sports-wise by calling us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-321. 1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Hour number one, Jason Caldwell joined us from the road. He and Christian Clemente of Auburn Undercover, they're watching some high school football practices today. They're up in the Birmingham area. We're at Thompson earlier today. They were at Parker when they called in. Of course, big commitment, Jordan Crawford, one of Auburn's 25 commitments, class of 25, not number of commitments, but one of Auburn's commitments for 2025 there. And, of course, Naeem Offord, who everybody in the country wants. He's committed to Ohio State. I have a feeling he won't wind up at Ohio State. I think he winds up closer to home. Alabama and Auburn both really, really want the young corner. And as Jason said, I mean, he's a guy that looks like a college junior or senior right now as he gets ready to head into his senior year at Parker High School. So we appreciate
and
Jason joining
us.
Bigger,
as the bigger schools get more selective about who they take, right, because schools are relying more on the transfer portal to fill their 85 and fill the two deep, players that look like they can make an impact early are going to be the ones. That,
oh, yeah.
Like, you're taking fewer, but the ones you want.
It's the,
like
the guys that seem like surefire, they can't miss, they're going to be able to contribute early.
Like, Hollywood's making fewer movies now, Bill, but the ones they make need to be blockbusters, right? The ones
they
all need to be smash hits.
They aren't, but they need to.
I know, they all need to. But that's the, you know, I heard the Fall Guy was amusing. I don't know.
I bet it is.
Yeah,
I bet it is.
I've heard the Fall Guy's pretty fine. I like Gosling and comedy.
Yeah, let's see, what's next? Is it ape time?
You got apes. Yeah, those damn dirty apes, Bill.
Yeah.
You maniacs.
It's hard to ever come close to the original, but I mean,
maniacs.
It's been a pretty, it's been a much better franchise than I thought.
Man. They're all pretty good.
I mean, it's been better than I thought. I really thought.
The Wahlberg one's a tough watch.
Yeah,
But the rebooted apes are they've all been pretty good movies. Yeah, but I'd say similar to now that the top schools in college football. Somehow this is similar to the fact that in the top schools of college football are being far more selective about who they take from high school. And those players, when there's one that looks like he can contribute right out of high school, the top schools are all going to be after him. You mentioned Ohio State, Alabama, Auburn, Georgia also in the picture.
Oh, yeah, very much so. So we hope you had a chance to hear Jason. He was on with us in the last half hour of hour number one. If you didn't hear it, we encourage you to check out our podcast.
That's right. Podcast The Drive, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. All that's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Want to make a correction, because we had the text box open in hour number one. If you want to text the show, 334-564-1840. But I mentioned, as I was driving by, I thought I saw Vanderbilt practicing on one of the practice fields.
Must have been Mizzou.
It must have been Missouri, who played Ole Miss. I think that game just finished up. It must have been Missouri getting in some last looks, warming up before the LSU game, before the Ole Miss game, while LSU was playing. Vanderbilt does not have a softball team.
They do not field a team.
They have a bowling team,
which they won a national championship.
I believe the first team sport national championship ever won by Vanderbilt was won by the bowling team. The first time a men's team won a team sport national championship was the baseball team a couple of years ago for Vanderbilt. But the Vanderbilt, and I think Arkansas State also a team in a conference that has D1 softball, but they're one of the lone holdouts that does not play D1 softball in the Sun Belt. But no Vanderbilt, no softball team. I knew that. It just didn't occur to me as I was driving by and I saw the uniforms, I thought I saw the Vanderbilt old gold. It was, in fact, the Missouri uniform. Auburn about to play in the softball tournament.
Yep, Auburn, campus. The 10 seed, will be playing Georgia, the 7 seed. That game was scheduled originally for 4 o'clock, but because the LSU-Alabama game, which appropriately, I mean, your 8-9 matchup should be a tough battle, and it was. It went into extra innings before LSU beat Alabama. And now this is a single elimination tournament. So Alabama is out.
And Auburn going with, if you can check it out up there, Bill, Auburn going with Matty Penta.
I would think Matty. I would think Matty would be on the mound.
Matty Penta getting the call for Auburn tournament play.
Missouri, by the way, beat Ole Miss in the other game. Ole Miss won the play-in game over Kentucky. So Missouri advancing. And so LSU will take on Tennessee, the top seed tomorrow. Missouri will take on Arkansas, the 4 seed, in the second game. The winner of the Auburn-Georgia game will take on 2nd seed Florida tomorrow, scheduled for a 4 o'clock first pitch.
And the Auburn-Georgia game, I almost said Vanderbilt again, the Auburn-Georgia game about to start on SEC Network, live from Auburn. Auburn, the host, taking on the Georgia Bulldogs in the 7-10 game.
But Georgia is the home team because they're the higher seed. Right. So it's going to seem odd for Auburn at home to be the visiting team and batting first.
Are they in the visitor's dugout? Do they have
should
to
be.
Wow, okay. So should Auburn, be. Unfamiliar territory there for Auburn as they're in the if they're on the other side. Nice crowd there behind home plate as the first pitch gets in. And we are underway with Auburn and Georgia live on the SEC Network there. So you can check that out if you want, or probably swing on by the softball.
Yeah,
complex.
I think there's some tickets available. The final game, by the way, the final game of the day will be the matchup between Mississippi State, the 6 seed, and South Carolina, the 11 seed, and the winner there gets 3rd seed Texas A&M tomorrow.
Auburn gets Florida tomorrow if they beat Georgia
yes.
Tonight. They were just talking with the Florida coach before the game on SEC Network. So that's the SEC Network covering the softball tournament as Auburn looks to stay alive. Auburn's season probably over with a loss in this one. I don't know exactly where they stand as far as tournament projections and things. Maybe they've played.
I don't know. They may. I mean, the strength of schedule is going to be tough. It's
I'll get you an update on that.
A win could really help. We mentioned baseball as Lee Scott and Glenwood splitting today, so they will play tomorrow at Patterson Field for the AISA title. And as I said, one of the last competitions, if not the last, may not be because of golf, competitions for Lee Scott and Glenwood before they make the move from AISA to the AHSAA, where the 7A playoffs are in the semifinals right now. And no shocker, it's Auburn and Central. Seems like it's always been Lee Scott and Glenwood in AISA, and it's Auburn and Central in the AHSAA. And Auburn jumped out with 2 runs in the first inning. And in the second inning, leading Central in Phenix City by the score of 2-0. Our trusty board op running the board over in W. Lee, Steve, is going to text us anytime there's a change in the score.
And I've found bracketology that has Auburn in the field. So Auburn's
I think they're in pretty good shape. A win sure wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, Auburn, the 10 seed, and having played their way back in the field. Because you're right, when the Mickey Dean announcement came down, Auburn was on the outside looking
right.
in, but they've played their way back into NCAA tournament contention. And so, Auburn, I saw one projection that had, stop me if you heard this one before, Auburn could be in the NCAA tournament going to the Tallahassee Regional.
Oh, gee, what an unusual thought there. I mean, well, that's a place that Auburn fans have never had a chance to trek to.
Georgia, by the way, projected as one of the top 16 seeds and could be the host, although Auburn just broke through with a run early in.
Yeah,
this,
already a run in the top of the first.
I think it was Ice. I think it was who got the got the grounder through.
Yeah, she is. She's been Auburn's best hitter. I mean, it's no question.
Yep.
So yeah, Auburn with an early 1-0 lead.
Well, they got an axe in the starting lineup, which just rules.
All right, so we'll keep you updated on that game and what's going on. By the way,
Axe a great name for a hitter, right?
Oh, it is.
Boy or girl, you name your kid something that you can shorten to Axe, and they're gonna swing a power bat, Bill.
Well, and there's some names, there's some
take
last
you
names,
450 to dead centers.
There's some last names that it's like they're either very appropriate or it's like, man, that should not.
You talking about James Outman?
He's swinging the bat like that. How about the guy that just got sent down for the Brewers, Jansen Junk? I mean, that's not a great name for a pitcher.
Who was? Outman's my
favorite. Hey, he had a really good year for me last year.
He did. He's all right. But no, Axe is part of this as Auburn threatens here against Georgia in the first inning of the first round of the SEC tournament.
You know, for most of these teams, though, they know they're in the tournament. It's great if you can win the conference tournament, but
and it would be really cool for Mickey Dean. I don't believe Auburn has won the SEC tournament under Mickey Dean. It would be pretty cool if Auburn pulled that off in his final season, too. Now it'd be a bit of a Cinderella run as the 10 seed, it's a single elimination tournament. Auburn feels pretty good whenever Maddie Penta's on the mound, and they've won some games without her as well. So, we'll see what happens. Can't win it if you don't win today, Bill. It's the nature.
No, that's right. That's right. It is one and done here in the SEC tournament. Something that I'm sure we're going to see in the SEC baseball tournament starting next year when we go to 16 teams.
You think they're taking everybody and going to a single elimination tournament?
I think it's
going to
be single elimination. I think that's better. I think it's better for a conference tournament, especially in a league that, I mean, it's already as talented as it is right now.
Do you need to take all 16?
I think you may.
All right. I mean, I understand that's probably the easiest format is a 16-team tournament where you take everybody.
You only have to win four games.
I'm not opposed to conference tournaments being something you need to earn your way into. Like I'm okay with that raises the stakes on the regular season.
You're in the conference. It's a conference tournament,
right? But if you say you need to qualify to
you need to when you have an oddball number of teams.
Sure, and I'm not sure an oddball number of teams should be the only reason why you would make it to where, yeah, you know what, you got to earn your way in.
Nah, I don't think so.
You got to earn your way in top four, top eight, top whatever. Like those are the teams that get to.
Well, you're taking right now. You're taking 12 of 14 in baseball, and you've got all 13 in softball making it.
If conference tournaments are supposed to be just money making ventures where you play as many games as possible and you try to bring in as many teams as possible into it, which is fine.
You got 16 teams though.
Yep.
It just works. It works so easy. You seed them all, and you play, and you got four games is the max that you'll have to play. Because the thing is, you always worry about taxing your pitching staff or somebody having to go more innings. There's invariably extra innings or something, and a team coming from the loser's bracket is having to try to find guys and come through.
Do you see benefits of a smaller field in a conference tournament?
I don't.
You don't? Okay, because I'm thinking like, it makes it a more exclusive thing. It makes it a thing you had to earn your way into. It makes it more likely that the best team in the league is actually going to win the conference tournament. It protects your top seeds somewhat. I mean, I think it probably makes more sense in mid-major college sports because you want to send your best team to the postseason. And a field that protects the top teams
right.
in the league.
I mean, in a league where you're probably going to get 9 or 10 teams in anyway, it's not going to hurt. And I think it's great for the fans to be able to all have something to go to, whether your team, you know, has struggled or not. It's still fun to go to, and you're probably not going to win it. But hey, all you have to do then is win 4 straight, and maybe you can make the field.
I do love a playoff race, though. Like a play, you know. Like I mean, the thought of like, all right, you know, these teams are battling for the last spot in this thing, or these teams are battling.
Yeah, but they're battling. I mean, the thing is, they're battling for the last spot in the big tournament, in the NCAA tournament. I think a conference tournament, everybody, if possible, everybody ought to be able to get in. That's just my feeling. We'd love your thoughts. Our listeners' thoughts on that, on anything you want to talk about sports-wise. Speaking of heading to Tallahassee, did you see that's where Cam Riley is transferring?
Oh, is that right? I know he was. Now Cam Riley was originally going to NC State, which I believe is also where Donovan Kaufman is going.
I think Kaufman is NC State.
Donovan Kaufman graduating this weekend from Auburn, getting his degree, walking among other athletes that were out there in the ceremony that I went to was Donovan Kaufman. Also, Cali got her degree from Cali Sanford from the Auburn beat writer and intern with the OA News and Savannah Bananas. Cali, so she was out there as well. It was very cool. But originally Cam Riley had committed to NC State. He backed off that and reopened his recruitment, and now it looks like he's going to spend his final year of college football down in Tallahassee playing for Coach Norvell.
All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
Orthopedic.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Was that all? That would have been great. Oh, my. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because people think that people seem to think that like older folks are more easily touched or something. I am completely the opposite of that. I'm a lot of things that just seem to just get to people.
But I'd say you've been like that your whole life, right?
I pretty much am.
When you were younger,
things I go, are you serious? But, yeah. I mean, I feel like there's just a tendency to be looking for something to just be shocked or outraged. Maybe not outraged, but,
alarmed
by.
I'm not sure it's generational. I don't know if it's generational.
No, I don't think it is.
Because I don't think it is.
But I think more and more people just are looking for things to just be to criticize.
I suppose. I mean, I do think there is something to maybe people have always been this critical, and there's just like social.
Oh yeah,
media
they just didn't have
like
the means to be able to. To let it out.
When there was like a controversial commercial in like the 80s or the 90s, people didn't. I mean, what did you do? You wrote a letter to the editor in a local newspaper.
And nobody else knew about it.
Called the switchboard at the
TV
station.
Yeah, there wasn't any public forum for you to be able to
vent. Because I've heard a story about like, I think it was Guns N' Roses. There was a Guns N' Roses video that premiered on MTV and the reaction was such that the switchboard actually caught on fire. Like enough people called the
people thing. People think that kind of thing is crazy, but it really you could shut switchboards down.
Yes, if enough
people absolutely could.
If enough people called a number, you know, at a certain time back in the day, the technology couldn't handle
it. If you see Al Mason sometime, you can ask him about that. That happened a couple of times in Montgomery.
That the switchboard would overload.
Absolutely, and when it would be some unbelievable prize or an opportunity to to win like thousands of dollars worth of something, and you only had so many lines and people were supposed to call.
So I'm thinking I'm thinking back in the day when the MTV switchboard would overload, like that was people that was folks saying, how and now those people go on social media. Like now that's it's a,
no question.
And it's it can lead to you never know who's gonna never know whose turn it is in the box.
Not great news from Steve. We mentioned Auburn High with 2 in the first, Central with 5 in the second. It is 5-2 Central going to the third. And remember, these are 7-inning high school games.
And Georgia tying the game in the bottom of the first.
Oh, man, I turned my head. After it Auburn, was 1-0 with one out.
After Auburn makes it a 1-0 lead in the first inning, Georgia able to tie it up. And Matty Penta on the mound trying to get out of a jam with a runner on second base in the first inning over at the softball field.
Yeah, so the ball game tied at 1. Third game of the day there in the SEC baseball tournament. We mentioned a little earlier, SEC baseball, SEC softball tournament. I was thinking baseball because, as we mentioned earlier, number one pick last year in the Major League draft, Paul Skeens from LSU by way of Air Force, where he was, I mean, he was a great hitter as well. He was a pitcher and catcher and one of the top sluggers in the nation before he decided to focus just on pitching. We were just talking about Ohtani yesterday and had a question, you know, about how good a hitter could he be if he just focused on hitting. And I heard some talk on MLB radio, as a matter of fact, yesterday after the show. I was listening to it a little bit, and that's exactly what they were discussing on the MLB was, could he be the best hitter generationally, or, you know, one of the best ever if he just focused on hitting?
Ohtani?
And I mean, and that's Paul Skeens is a guy that was a great two-way player that is focused on pitching and now is considered the best pitching prospect since Steven Strasburg.
You know, I saw Ohtani play his rookie season in Los Angeles, and it's like I you know, watching his at-bats and watching him get a hold of one, it's like, yeah, I've thought all along the pitching is great,
and he is great,
and
he is great as a pitcher.
But if it's jeopardizing his availability as a hitter,
mm-hmm.
I understand why teams would be tempted to bail on it and just utilize him as a hitter because he's that dominant as a hitter.
And I mean, there was a guy, you know, nearly 100 years ago that had the same type situation. Babe Ruth was one of the best pitchers in all of Major League Baseball, but he was the best hitter that the game had ever seen.
And we've
the,
I
the
mean,
best power hitter.
And
the game
there,
had
there
ever
was
seen,
I mean sure. David Ortiz was a force in the lineup without fielding a position. You know, as a DH, you know, he's a Hall of Fame player who really barely played in the field during his prime. I think it's absolutely true. That could also be the case for Ohtani.
I think Ohtani, though, it's not. He's DHing now because he's coming off, you know, rotator cuff surgery, and he can't throw the ball like he normally could. I mean, he could play multiple places in the outfield. I don't think David Ortiz was not a great first baseman. It was just his best position was DH.
Yeah, but I'd be okay with him just DHing.
I think he would probably like in the field somewhere.
It helps you probably with lineup flexibility if you can deploy him at a position too, although that's not as important as it used to be because the National League has the DH. You used to think, well, in interleague play, you know, where do you put your everyday DH? Do you move him to the outfield when it's not his usual position? Do you play him at first? Things like that. But I think in the case of, I mean, with Ohtani, the way he's producing, look, maybe the Dodgers want to get more out of him than they currently are. But I think just letting him DH and be this kind of force in the lineup, they're getting a return on their investment without nothing but his bat in the lineup.
Yeah, no question. So what kind of, I mean, I
back to Skeens?
Yeah, what kind of debut would you expect? I mean, No, I'm not just talking about
Americans
his first game.
Do you think Americans are going to try the Ohtani thing? Like, do you think there's?
Yes, I think there are a couple of prospects that want to try to do that right now.
Yeah, I wonder how patient or how open to the idea.
You better be good. You better be really, really good at both.
And you better stay healthy, or a team's going to make you bail on one of those.
Yeah,
two
that's
things.
Exactly like, right. If you struggle at either, they're going to say, give it up.
Yeah, and if you get hurt, they may try to tell you to give up one of the two things too, because it may stunt your development.
Man, but just think of Paul Skeens was a pitcher catcher, yeah. A catcher that could hit for power and average. I mean, that is. I mean, if you're decent defensively,
I've only heard stories.
You're a very valuable commodity, but I guess you're not as valuable as a guy that throws 100 plus with as good a breaking ball as anybody's ever seen. And throws everyone where you want it.
What kind of a hitter was Huddy? Because I know he was an excellent college baseball hitter.
He hit nearly 400 his senior year.
Do you think he could have been a high contact, high average?
Yeah, I think he could. I don't know that I would have expected him to be a big power hitter.
People were surprised he generated the kind of power as a pitcher
he was also
not Randy Johnson,
excellent right? Center fielder.
Yeah,
I mean he was an excellent outfielder.
Physically not an overwhelming guy. But was able to maximize that as a pitcher,
right.
and probably would have would have had a different challenge if he tried to make it as an outfielder.
Yeah,
that's
one of those. I mean, you wonder, and a lot of folks wondered, you know, how good would he have been if he'd been able to still bat. But I mean, when you're in the majors and you're getting that kind of opportunity, or you're in professional ball and you're getting that opportunity, especially back then, clubs weren't going to waste their time with you. They didn't want you wasting your time or him wasting his time on swinging the bat when they wanted to see the progression that he was making and continued to make as a pitcher.
Especially for AL teams. Especially for AL teams that rarely were going to hit the ball anyway, except in interleague play and stuff. I remember hearing pre-universal DH, the story was AL pitchers basically never practiced base running.
A lot of them. A lot of them didn't.
AL pitchers basically never practiced base running, and there was concerns about injuries or concerns about just how prepared they were to do that sort of thing, because it was a thing that you basically never had to do before. If your league had
if you weren't ever going to bat, then you weren't going to be. I mean, unless you were a super athletic guy with a lot of speed that might pinch run.
Sure.
There's no reason for you to be practicing base running.
And so, now here we are with the Universal DH, and you rarely get to see the, Bartolo Colon, Colon surprise appearance or something like that. But, it's a different era. And, I want to see. We were checking. Seems like the Paul Skeens thing might be regional television only, or MLB.tv might be the way to watch it. What a shame. Hopefully they can figure something out, because it'd be great to see Paul Skeens make his debut on a big stage.
As we get to our bottom of the hour break, Georgia adds a run, 2-1 dogs as we head to the second inning in the SEC softball tournament. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us in the final half hour here on the Wednesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 25 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's get back to the drive. Hotline sponsored by Skybar and Tex. Hey, Tex.
Hey, Tex.
Hey, I heard you talking about Paul Skeens. Lucky enough to have seen him before he went off to spring training.
Man, he seems like a sharp guy, too.
He's a very, very smart guy. And we've had the discussion about whether or not he would want to do both. And he basically said no. He said, I was a really good hitter against mid-level Division I baseball teams. I wasn't always a good hitter against the top guys.
But it's interesting. I mean, he wasn't as dominant a pitcher either. Did he feel like that's because he couldn't focus on it?
Because he couldn't focus on it, and Air Force is a great place to go to school. You don't always get the high end. There probably won't be too many high end pitching coaches at Air Force.
Understand.
It's tough to exclusively focus on your sport at Air Force as well, because you're still going through. You're going through everything else in your first 2 years as a cadet. You know, my little brother graduated from Air Force Academy a couple years ago. That is my dad went there. You know, back in the 70s. Yeah. But like when I hear about someone, especially from a service academy, who is even considered for the draft. It's remarkable to think that they've played their way into that position. And for somebody like Skeens, yeah, I think there are developmental perks to being in the SEC that you're just not going to get at Service Academy.
Correct. And he also has stated his 10-year goal is, well, his goal is to play in the big leagues for 10 years and then go into the Air Force.
Right.
Which is quite remarkable.
Yeah, no kidding.
So here's where the rest of the discussion went, is that when I first met him, we had talked about his breaking ball, and that's what he had spent most of the offseason working at. And I had mentioned to him that his breaking ball wasn't in the same arm slot, and he had a discussion. How do you see that? I said, I don't know. I just see things. And he said, well, you're exactly right. So now his breaking ball is coming out of the same arm slot as his fastball and his changeup, which makes things significantly different. So guys like Tim Hudson that you mentioned, or Maddox, the reason they were so successful is they threw multiple pitches out of the same arm slot, and you couldn't get into a routine against them where just looking for where the arm slot was to tell what was coming. So a 93, 94-mile-an-hour slider, a 90-mile-an-hour changeup, and a 100-mile-an-hour fastball can be difficult, but he also knows and understands that at the level he's at now, it's not as difficult for them. It will be interesting to see. I would expect, and he's been on this two-inning to three-inning outing
right
throughout the whole beginning. My guess is he's not going more than two or three. And I would expect for him to throw really, really well. If he's down in the zone and his breaking ball is being thrown for strikes, he's going to be very effective. I can't wait to see it. I'm going to find a way to see it, even if I have to watch it after. So it's quite remarkable to have – had the opportunity to talk to a young man like that. By the way, his hands are as big as Nolan Ryan.
He is a big. He's a big dude. People don't realize how big he is. He's like 6'6", isn't he?
He's at least 6'6", 6'7". I tell everybody I'm 5'10", and that's with heels on. I've been shrinking, and
yeah, it happens.
He makes me look extremely, extremely small. The other thing is I wanted to talk about is last night was kind of a special moment for a longtime Auburn family when Ben Shore pitched two innings scoreless with one hit and ended up getting the win. That was his first college win. I've talked about Ben before.
Yeah, you have.
He came to Auburn. He came from Auburn as from Columbus as a catcher, has struggled through injuries, lost his father last year. Mr. Doug never got to see him play. I grew up with Doug and played against him and with him all through Little League and Babe Ruth and summer leagues. So I followed Ben quite a bit. For him to get a win last night and the reaction that Andy had at the end of the game was really cool. A lot of excitement in his voice about Ben getting his first ever collegiate win. He's got one more year of eligibility left. So he's a guy. They brought him in against A&M and got roughed up a little bit and ended up taking the loss, but you will see that name again, I think, in the future, because he's pitched really well other than the A&M game. And to come in last night and get it was huge. So I just want to recognize Ben Shore. They talked about players of the game. He would be my player of the game just because he got his first win and fairly close to the family. But number two, have you ever seen a game where you – saw two better plays in the outfield?
That catch by Cade, the mm-hmm. and there was one.
Yeah,
that,
he had a pretty good ninth, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, and him and Stanfield both got interviewed after the game, and they both said the same thing. Before every game, they go out and measure the distance between the grass and the wall on the warning track, so they know how many steps to take before they jump. I don't know if you heard that, but
no, I didn't.
Awesome.
About it. two steps, and both of them, if you watch the replays, exactly two steps and jump. That's preparation and knowledge about how to play the game. They mentioned how Coach Gross takes them out there and walks them through that before every game. And just a reminder of what it takes to get to the wall, because you may have a chance to bring one back. And it was pretty cool to watch. The neat thing about it was I'd like to thank the ACC Network. I watched you for the first time ever because you were carrying the baseball game last night. And thank you, YouTube TV, for having it. So it was fun to watch. But I listened to Andy and them on the call.
Uh-huh.
So
It comes in handy during college basketball season too when they've got the tournament. But I'm not a frequent viewer of the ACC Network, Tex.
Yeah. Well, frequent probably wouldn't be the word I'd ever think of, because that was the first time. If we play on them again, if we were doing a regional somewhere and they've got a game, I probably would watch it.
Hey, the Cal game might be on the ACC Network now that they're now that they're in the conference.
Oh gosh. Well, I plan on being at the Cal game, so it'll be okay. The other thing is I really appreciated all y'all's talk early on in the show about what we may be looking for in the portal. Mm-hmm. And Bill, I think you made an excellent point when you said best available. If there's somebody that can help your team and you've got spots.
Oh yeah. If you can get them, you better.
And last but not least, can we talk about the hypocrite? The head coach at LSU.
I got asked about that this morning. We don't buy players. Brian Kelly.
Holy bull crap.
Yeah.
Drive through Baton Rouge and look at the gold color, the yellow-covered signs alongside of the road, billboards, with Get Gordon on it, with football players on it.
Yeah, what he should have said, look, let's face it, I mean, nobody wants to say, hey, we'll top the highest offer. I mean, what he should have said is...
I mean, nobody's going to LSU against their will because of the money. Like, that's not...
They're not going to LSU in spite of...
LSU's not getting players off of eBay, but at the same time, like, I do think coaches who... It reminds me of Jimbo, right? Like, coaches who get overly sensitive about the idea that NIL is playing a role in their programs...
Well, no, Kelly got overly sensitive because... They went 0-for-3 on the defensive lineman that they wanted to get. It's not because they didn't offer him anything. It's just that they didn't offer enough, apparently.
Is he implying that other people are buying players?
Yes, absolutely he is.
Exactly. So, holy bull.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that one up. I'd nearly forgotten about talking about that.
How about that, Tex?
So, they were buying him before. So to deny that you're buying them now when it's legal, and it came from the same place.
Yep.
If he needed the money, all he's got to do is get Gordon. So because he's brought a lot of players in.
Hey, is Kelly feeling heat because so many other programs have won national championships at LSU in the last couple of years?
Well, when you're 5'6", you have a little inferiority complex. So I think he doesn't think he's the big man on campus because, quite honestly, people love Kim Mulkey probably more than him. So I guess, he may be feeling a little heat. So I hate that they love Kim Mulkey, too, by the way. That's another story for a whole other time. But,
I hear you.
My wife played against her in high school and college. So we'll have that discussion another time. All right, guys. I appreciate the time. Y'all take care.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Tex.
Bye, Tex.
Yeah. What he's talking about, Brian Kelly interviewed yesterday, and he was asked about the lack of defensive linemen, something LSU needed. And LSU, by the way, ranks 70th in Rivals transfer rankings, and they only have 7 transfers they've added thus far this year. So he is... he's added by, I believe, he was asked, where are you right now with the defensive line recruiting? And Brian Kelly responded, it hasn't fared very well, quite frankly, because we're selling something a little bit differently. We're not in the market of buying players. So, I mean, that's been taken. And, Wimp and Barry Sanderson asked me, wow, is that a shot at everybody else? I said, no, that is an excuse for them not getting players.
Both.
But it's
both is yeah. what it is. I mean, I would hope the follow-up question is, who is buying players, Brian? And you know, what's the going rate these days? But no, that's yeah, that does sound like you bristle at any
you're
sort of
you're not buying players, but you're offering them NIL and endorsements.
I bristle at sort. I mean, people in general don't like to hear stuff that feels like excuse making,
right?
But then also to sort of give an answer that points the finger elsewhere without being specific, you know, as though what he's everyone who's landed an impact defensive lineman
they bought
in the last 9 months. Yeah. I guess it's maybe
you had better be competitive. Your offer,
true,
which includes NIL, had better be competitive.
Maybe
the whole thing ought to be competitive. Look, maybe Brian Kelly's about to the same point Nick Saban was. All right, if that's the case, time to get out of the biz.
The other thing is it makes it sound like no one has chosen LSU for financial reasons,
right,
at any point during Brian Kelly's tenure. And everyone, you know, people picking other places are doing it. You know, it's that classic. We hear it with the fans, right? Like, oh, well, our school's doing it the right way.
Yes.
And our kids are here for the right reasons. And anyone who doesn't pick us and picks another school is going there for the wrong reasons. It's like maybe everyone's got pretty similar reasons.
Yeah, I mean,
here.
Just listen to the first paragraph of this story. Brian Kelly believes some players in the transfer portal are picking their schools based on how much endorsement money they can make. And he wants it known that LSU isn't going to be in a bidding war. Okay, maybe they won't be in a bidding war, but that doesn't mean they're not going to say, and you can make this much.
I don't know. I mean,
let's face it. Every school has to have a budget. They have to know where they can go and how much they have available for you know, the team, for each position, for, you know, there has to be a budget. It's not unlimited for everyone. So, yes, you don't want to get into a bidding war because, you know, you don't want to exceed your budget.
If he's telling the truth about that, you'd feel like LSU, based on everything we've heard about the recruiting landscape these days.
And things aren't heading in the right direction.
You would think that LSU is going to really struggle to attract talent.
Yeah.
With that, I mean, I remember hearing it in the aftermath of Brian Harsin. Like, I would be very nervous about, and I guess, you know what, when Dabo Swinney was a candidate for different jobs, we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be very nervous about bringing in a coach who is sort of openly angry about the transfer portal and the NIL developments, because it feels like that's someone who's going to struggle to attract and relate to top talent. If you're not really on board with the, you can have reservations, you can even think the system needs tinkering, but to yearn for the days of yore and to want NIL out of the sport and to want the transfer portal to, like, that's probably not the attitude that a successful coach moving forward is going to have. I understand why fans would want to be nostalgic about the way the college athletics used to be, but I'd be nervous about that. And Brian Kelly's answer is a little bit of, like, you know, it's a little days of yore.
Well, the question hit a nerve, you know, hit a little bit of an open wound.
How about this? Is he suggesting other coaches at LSU buy players? Because they've done very well in the transfer portal.
Yeah, they have.
They've done very well in the transfer portal in some other sports at LSU. You know,
golly, that would be a fun question to have asked.
I mean,
asked him next.
I mean, but is that an accurate thing to say? Some other sports at LSU.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
There are other sports at LSU that have been able to recruit the transfer portal at a national championship level. Angel Reese transferred to LSU from Maryland.
Well, Paul Skeens.
Paul Skeens transferred to LSU from Air Force.
They brought in some players. Well, I mean, maybe in the other sports they're good enough that they don't have to buy them.
Interesting, yeah. Those players.
Is that the case, Brian?
No motivation financially.
All right, let's get to our final break of the afternoon.
You asked something else about the transfer
portal. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the transfer portal and NIL and another question I was wondering about. When we come back, stick with us for the final segment of the Wednesday Drive.
Inspired by the bold bison.
ESPN 1067 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes here on this Wednesday. A quick update. Not great right now for Auburn High. The Tigers scored two in the top of the third to cut Central's lead to 5-4. Central added four. It is now 9-4 Central as they go to the fourth. All right, so the other thing I was wondering, when we were talking about transfer and NIL, I thought as we heard stories over the last few days about Cliff Amore, and I believe that's how the Rutgers center's last name is pronounced, turning down millions of dollar offers at multiple schools, and people wondering, well, what's he getting in Alabama? How much did Alabama pay? Or the insinuation that he didn't need anything to go to Alabama. He turned down $2 million or something. But then I thought to myself, what happened to international players' problems receiving NIL? We'd heard a lot about that last year, and you mentioned the Gonzaga coach talking about that during the tournament.
Yeah, there's still an open question. I don't think it's an NCAA regulation. This has to do with...
No, it's not.
This has to do with if you're in the United States on an international student visa as a student athlete, there are limits as to what you can and cannot do for money and what and how much money you're allowed to make before you're violating the student visa. Because in theory, someone in America on a student visa is not here to earn a living and to profit financially from that. They're here to get just an education. And so those were sort of always the laws about,
right?
And you'd worked with international students.
Absolutely.
On campus, and there were very set rules for what an international student can and cannot do. And these rules existed before NIL was a thing for...
Long time before.
A long time before NIL was a thing for student-athletes. My understanding now is there's still... Like, there hasn't really been an update, and athletes are on their own getting guidance about what you can and cannot or what you should or should not do. But as of the Final Four last month, there was still, there were still questions about, about what players, it's sort of an open question as to whether or not they can do this and still comply with the rules of their student visa.
Yes,
right. Except can they accept NIL money and still comply with the rules of their visa? It's still an open question legally.
I think that's a very interesting question. We'll try to see if we can find anything about that. But because it appears that some of the top international players are receiving offers just like everyone else. Fun show today. We appreciate Jason joining us from the road. We're back with Yamar Ferg. Is he in town?
I think we should have a Ferguson appearance.
Well, that sounds good. Join us then. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.